play which is currently on in Prague called Audience u Královny, a play which I saw in London, in English. Madam Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I recommend a play which is currently on in Prague at the National Theatre. It's about the Queen and her various prime ministers. In fact, our Queen has had 13 prime ministers so far, because she's had a very long reign, and prime ministers come and go. The play focuses on the audience, the weekly audience, the weekly meeting between the prime minister and the Queen. So the prime minister reports on developments, the Queen listens and asks questions, but of course no one knows exactly what is said. There is total discretion about the tenor of the conversation. So one can only speculate. And in this play, of course, there is very amusing speculation about what these various prime ministers may have said to the Queen and what she may have told them. I'd like to focus on three prime ministers out of the 13, and I'll choose those who left their mark on the course of history. First and foremost, Winston Churchill, the great war leader, a flamboyant statesman, larger than life. But in 1940, just before he became prime minister, his career would have been regarded as a total failure. He'd made huge mistakes in his political career, and today he'd be regarded as an alcoholic as well. But he was instrumental in inspiring the British nation to resist Nazi Germany, and I think this shows the power of oratory, the power of words. It's debatable whether anyone else could have inspired the nation in its darkest hour. I say in its darkest hour because there's a very good film currently which has that title, The Darkest Hour, about the mood in the nation just before 1940. Now, in the play, we see Winston Churchill as a prime minister in the early 1950s. And he was by then a very old man. The Queen was very young and inexperienced. And she's obviously in awe of this legendary figure, much diminished physically, but still a legend in his lifetime. The second prime minister I'd like to mention is Margaret Thatcher, who, by the way, greatly admired Winston Churchill for his courage and pugnacity, qualities which she had in abundance. Margaret Thatcher was even briefly a war leader when the Falkland Islands were invaded by Argentina. But she was mainly a peacetime reformer who came to power in 1979 when Britain was stagnating economically and when the country was crippled by chronic strikes. She was a firm believer in economic liberalism and relying on market forces, rolling back the state and taming, weakening the power of the trade union movement. I think we can say with the benefit of hindsight that she reversed the relative economic decline of the United Kingdom, and her reforms were necessary and beneficial. However, she also divided British society. And like so many politicians, she succumbed to hubris, to excessive confidence, excessive pride, and an inability to listen to others. Pride which precedes a fall. And her biggest mistake was to introduce the so-called poll tax. Let me explain what this was. Local taxation was based on the value of your house. Before that, Mrs. Thatcher felt that this was unfair because some people paid nothing, those who didn't own a house. And so she introduced a flat tax. In other words, everyone living in a particular local authority area paid exactly the same amount, regardless of income. And that is a tax which economists would call regressive. In other words, the poor pay proportionately more than the rich. And this poll tax led to riots. It was highly unpopular in the country. And the other mistake, in my opinion, was to embrace a Eurosceptical course. And it's interesting to speculate about the attitude which Margaret Thatcher would have shown in the referendum about EU membership. Personally, I don't think that she would have wanted to leave the European Union because she firmly believed in the single market. However, the Euroscepticism which she often expressed is one of the reasons why it was so difficult to convince the British people that it was in their interest to remain in the European Union. In the play, one gets the impression that Margaret Thatcher and the Queen didn't really hit it off all that well, that their relations were not quite as close and warm as those between the Queen and some of her other prime ministers. Whether that's because they were both women, I don't know. Anyway, all this is highly speculative. Thirdly, let me talk about Tony Blair. Tony Blair, the Labour Party leader, whose two achievements were to reconcile the Labour Party with the market economy and to make Labour electable again. To make Labour electable again, because Labour, the Labour Party, had been in the political wilderness for a long time, and Tony Blair brought it back into the centre ground where elections can be won. Of course, it's ironic that now the Labour Party is led by the very left-wing Jeremy Corbyn, who stands for everything that Tony Blair wanted to break away from. But these are the ironies of history. As Prime Minister, Tony Blair built on the reforms of Margaret Thatcher, but he softened the rougher edges, introducing a minimum wage, for example. In the play, we see Tony Blair with his characteristic grin, looking like an evangelical preacher. So, and it's clear that he's a charismatic figure. He has an air of moral fervor and emphatic sincerity. But I think that generally people get tired of charisma and emphatic sincerity and yearn for more of a grayer people. It's clear in retrospect that Tony Blair's downfall was the Iraq War. And I think that he will never be forgiven by many people for having dragged Britain into the Iraq War on the basis of information which was at best inaccurate. Others would say that Tony Blair lied. And then let me conclude by expressing a few ideas about the nature of political life. All three examples show that politicians can triumph for long periods. This was true of Winston Churchill, of Margaret Thatcher, and Tony Blair. And all three altered the course of history. That's undeniable. But all political careers end in failure. Winston Churchill, for example, was thrown out of office in the general election held just after the end of the Second World War. He'd led the country to victory, but the electorate decided that it wanted a change. And many politicians also retire too late. Winston Churchill, by the 1950s, was a sadly diminished figure. He should have retired earlier. Margaret Thatcher should have retired before introducing the poll tax and before being ousted by prominent members of her party. And Tony Blair, well, perhaps he should have retired, although he was still quite young, perhaps he should have retired before the Iraq War. Meanwhile, the Queen carries on. She's had 13 prime ministers already. I suspect that she will probably reign for longer than Mrs. May. We have to remember also that the Queen's mother died when she was almost 100. So the Queen has quite a long way to go, perhaps, and Prince Charles may have quite a long wait. Now, of course, the British monarchy is a constitutional monarchy and the Queen has no real power. But the monarchy is a symbol of stability and it is non-partisan. It is above politics. It may be an anachronism, but it's a very picturesque anachronism. So I leave it to you to decide whether you prefer to have the Queen of England or President Zeman. Thank you.